Okay, so the Joe Biden team continues to silence reporters. They have Joe Biden in this great protective bubble, and now Biden's people, they have shut off the Zoom chat on the virtual press conferences that Biden holds once a week, which are completely controlled, and they just control which questions get asked and who asks the questions. Now they've shut off the chat. The chat, that's not even how the reporters communicate with Joe Biden. That's how the reporters communicate with each other. So they have even less access now after they complained that they weren't getting enough access beforehand. This is according to the Daily Wire. Reporters were already frustrated. They were being blocked. They couldn't ask any tough questions to Joe Biden. Most reporters were not allowed to ask any questions at all. They complained about it. We reported that, by the way. So how did the Biden people respond? They said, all right, we're just going to cut off the chat totally. So now we can't even see the reporters complaining. You cannot make this stuff up. Yes, they've disabled the chat function. Like I said, it's been a weekly press conference. They take about five questions. They handpick basically the same reporters every week. Wink, wink. They already have it planned out that the reporters are never going to ask about Hunter Biden or about election fraud or anything difficult. Well, Mr. Biden, are you excited about taking office on January 20th? Mr. Biden, are you excited about having the first black female vice president? I mean, give me a break. All right, Mitch McConnell has, speaking of blocking, Mitch McConnell has now been blocking multiple votes on these $2,000 stimulus checks. So Mitch McConnell going against President Trump and going against numerous Republicans who are in favor of the $2,000 stimulus checks. Mitch McConnell, he did allow one vote on the $2,000 checks, but he included it. It was like this like tactic that was used that they often use in Congress. They included it with two other measures that they knew that Republicans would shoot down. It was an up-down vote, so it was all or nothing, all three measures. But he has not allowed a standalone vote on the $2,000 stimulus checks, which has already passed the House. And a lot of people believe there are enough votes in the Senate between Republicans and Democrats to push through the $2,000 stimulus checks, which, of course, President Trump has been very vocal about, very supportive about. Even though Trump, he did sign the bill into law. He signed the package under enormous pressure. He signed the package for the $600 stimulus checks, that massive, massive spending bill. But then he sent it back. He said, yeah, I'm signing this, but I want you to go and try to push through a $2,000 vote. And Mitch McConnell is calling it socialism for the rich. He's saying this $2,000 stimulus check, because it would be given indiscriminately, it would be given to distributed to every single American, including the wealthy. He's calling this socialism for the rich because everybody gets a check. The wealthy don't need the check. And yes, he's correct. He's correct that it's socialism. But here's the problem. It shows you there's no logic whatsoever. They purely, everything is just based on just whatever their mood is at the moment, because he voted for $600 stimulus checks. The current bill gives indiscriminate checks to the entire country, but they're $600 checks per person, not $2,000 checks. That's also socialism for the rich. Somebody explain to me Mitch McConnell's logic here, which there is no explanation whatsoever, that $2,000 checks are socialism for the rich because you're giving them to everybody indiscriminately, but $600 checks are not socialism for the rich. It's the same socialism. It's just $600 McConnell for some reason is able to stomach, but $2,000 he's not. Zero logic. It's purely they went and did a study and like, well, $600, that's okay. $2,000, no, that's socialism. You can't give out you want to give out no checks, give out no checks, but then do me a favor, don't give money to Egypt and Pakistan. But it's outrageous. It's outrageous that President Trump is here saying, listen, people need the money desperately, and why can't you give it to them? But you can send it off for foreign aid. It's egregious. And by the way, Mitt Romney somehow is against $2,000 checks, even though Mitt Romney, he was one of the first people to propose stimulus checks many months ago, but he's against $2,000 checks. And by the way, what is McConnell's solution? You know, McConnell is saying, well, this is socialism for the rich. Okay, he's saying, yes, many Americans need it, but now the rich are going to get it. They don't need it. Well, what's his solution? His solution is so nobody gets the $2,000 checks. I love that. You know, look, nobody is more anti-socialism than I am, as I keep saying. You don't want to spend the money, then don't spend the money. But like, the hypocrisy here, you know, is really stunning. And by the way, you know, the media has been like neutral on this. It's unbelievable. The media has not supported Trump. Here you have Trump clearly supporting what would normally be considered a liberal cause that the media would jump on. If it were Joe Biden or if it were Obama who were up against McConnell here saying, give the American people $2,000 checks. I mean, the media would be so outraged. The media would be having a meltdown against Mitch McConnell. But because it's Trump, and I've been supportive of McConnell. I want to be clear. Mitch McConnell, especially on the judges, McConnell has done so many good things. But that doesn't negate this. You know, in other words, I'm going to call a spade here. When I agree, I'll agree. When I disagree, I disagree. Senator Lindsey Graham, who's also pretty conservative. I'm not saying he's Rand Paul exactly. He's not Ted Cruz, but Lindsey Graham is conservative, and he says that we need to give these stimulus checks. He actually says it's not socialism. Here's a quote, Lindsey Graham on Twitter. Quote, with all due respect to my Republican colleagues, a $2,000 direct payment for individuals and families who are struggling is not socialism. In my view, it is necessary in the times in which we live. The country is overwhelmed by COVID. Hospitals are full and businesses are hanging by a thread. Direct payments may not be the most efficient way to help people in need, but given the situation we face, they are extremely necessary. And he says going exactly what we said, going from $600 to $2,000 does not make you a socialist. Mr. President, keep fighting for the American people who are suffering. Mitt Romney, he was the very first Republican. See, Romney, it shows you Romney's hypocrisy. He can never, ever get himself to agree with Trump, the man that he voted to throw out of office. Romney says he was the first Republican to endorse $1,000 direct checks back in March, but he says he's against increasing this amount, the $600. He says, quote, the economy is showing good signs of life, so we're not looking for a stimulus. We're looking to help people in need. Well, Trump is also looking to help people in need. And by the way, Senator Josh Hawley, he says, quote, and by the way, Josh Hawley is very conservative. Josh Hawley, as we're going to report later on, he is actually going to vote an objection, a protest vote against the electors who are set to certify President-elect Joe Biden. But Hawley said, quote, he can't figure out for the life of me why a standalone vote has been repeatedly blocked. He says a supermajority of the Senate is in favor of the $2,000 stimulus checks, but they simply cannot get it to a vote thanks to Mitch McConnell. Hawley said, quote, here we are in the throes of the worst pandemic in a century. Working people have borne the brunt of. All we're asking is that those working people be first in line for relief. All right, so as I reported, many Republicans are planning to challenge Joe Biden's victory this coming week. Again, January 6th, that is the big date, and I don't want to mislead anybody here. I know some people, there's a lot of confusion. Biden is going to win. He's going to be certified. You know, I'm hearing these, what I call conspiracy theorists, and look, I admire the passion and the emotion. I'm also desperate to figure out a way that Trump remained president. So it's not like, you know, you're betraying the cause. You know, you're saying that Biden's going to be certified the president. How could you? We thought you were pro-Trump. You can be pro-Trump, but still not be out of touch with reality. Biden's winning this thing. But I'm still glad that they're protesting it because they need to vocalize. They need to expose all the fraud and all the cheating. And we need to make sure it doesn't happen again. I'm not talking about in 2 years and in 4 years. I'm talking about in Georgia. Georgia, they cannot steal. I am so terrified about Georgia and about the Democrats stealing, doing this again and stealing the election of the two runoff seats. Obviously, everything hinges on this. I mean, you talk about the most important election maybe in U.S. history. No, and I never say that. I didn't even say it about the Biden-Trump election. And, you know, I didn't say it back in 2016, even though it was very important. I mean, if you ask me, you know, nobody knew it at the time, but the 2000 election was one of the most important because 9/11 was going to happen. And if Gore had been president, that would have been an absolute disaster. But anyway, I'm not one of these people who just I hear people every 4 years, this is the most important election, this is the most important election. Well, everyone can't be the most important election. But this one is, because if Biden controls both chambers, that would be an absolute catastrophe. Meanwhile, 11 Republican senators and senators-elect led by Ted Cruz have vowed to join the aforementioned Senator Josh Hawley. He's going to challenge votes from some of the contested states. Meanwhile, 140 Republicans in the House are expected to vote against the certification of Biden in the House this coming January 6th here, which is in a couple of days. And as I said, if you do the math, 140 is not enough to make Trump the winner and Biden the loser. So let's be clear, but it is a very, very historic protest, and it's an open rebellion, as being reported in the right-wing media. It's an open rebellion against Mitch McConnell once again. Mitch McConnell has urged Republican senators to avoid a public feud, a public debate over the legitimacy of November's election results. McConnell clearly trying to be in good standing with the Biden people. He wants to cooperate. He wants to work with the Biden people. Now, Mitch McConnell, as I said, he's pushed through hundreds of Trump judges. Mitch McConnell has helped President Trump win, you know, a lot of confirmations. He's done a lot of things right in the Senate over the last 4 years. He's been a very staunch ally of President Trump. So I don't want to negate all of that. But at the same time, he's an establishment guy. We can't lose sight of the fact Mitch McConnell, he's been there in Washington, surrounded by the swamp for 50 years. He's been a card-carrying member of the swamp. You cannot become the Senate Majority Leader on either side, Republican or Democrat, unless you're a card-carrying, red-blooded member of the swamp. So we have to remember, he's one of the better people in the swamp, you know, but that doesn't change the fact that he's an establishment guy and he wants them to avoid any sort of public protest against these election results. And it seems that that's not going to happen. They are ignoring and even rebelling against Mitch McConnell. Now, I want to read you CNN once again, the same old drivel over and over again, but I see it and I just need to vent about it. CNN, when they're reporting about how there's going to be this massive protest by Republicans, historic, against the certification of Biden as president-elect, CNN says, quote, there have been no credible allegations of any issues with voting that would have impacted the election, as affirmed by dozens of judges, governors, election officials, the Electoral College, the DOJ, Department of Homeland Security, and the U.S. Supreme Court. Lies. Those end quote. And we'll get another quote in a second here. Lie, 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 lie. CNN, once again, fake news, op-ed in what they consider a news story. They're giving their own opinion, and it's a fake, false, bogus opinion because there have been tons of credible allegations. They have not been able to prove it. It would be a very difficult job in a few weeks to prove mass voter fraud, the scale of which that would overturn results like this. But there absolutely have been enormous, they say, no credible allegations, and they say it's confirmed by dozens of judges. That's a lie. The judges did not rule on the merits of the case. They tossed out these lawsuits for various technicalities, so that did not at all disprove. No judge has affirmed, oh, there's no election fraud. They couldn't. How do the judges know? The judges haven't even seen the evidence. How could they possibly know that? Election officials, not true, except for Democrat election officials who obviously cannot be trusted because they're the ones who rigged it. The Justice Department, that's a lie, as we've told you many times. All Barr said was he said he didn't see enough evidence that would overturn, that would be of a scale to overturn the election. I mean, the DOJ would take them years to uncover that level of evidence. That doesn't prove anything. Again, you can't prove a negative, certainly not in this few weeks. It's impossible. And the U.S. Supreme Court, again, they threw things out based on technicalities. They never actually judged anything based on the merit. So CNN, it's abject lies that they're feeding to their 12 or 15 or 30 readers. Now, Trump is determined, back to CNN here, Trump is determined to claim he did not lose, which he did significantly. Many GOP politicians either share his delusion or fear provoking his wrath, even if that means voting to undermine democracy. This is not a CNN op-ed, mind you. This is an actual news story, quote-unquote news story. That's what they call it. All right, I want to talk about the Muncie murderer. Of course, we haven't discussed him in a while. Grafton Thomas, the Hanukkah stabber, and turned out to be a murderer because one of his victims did tragically perish. And he's been ruled mentally unfit. Can you believe it's been a year? And wow, what a year it's been since then. Amazing. You know, it seems like an eternity ago, I think, to many of us, considering, you know, all the things that have happened since that horrific, horrific tragedy. But Grafton Thomas, the Muncie murderer, has been ruled unfit, mentally unfit to stand trial. And it's so outrageous. It's so outrageous because anybody who commits an act like this is mentally ill. So a federal judge has ordered, and that should not absolve them in any way, and it should not make them unfit to stand trial. Then basically pretty much any mass murderer or anybody who carries out an attack like this is mentally unfit to stand trial, which is exactly what the liberals are going for here. So a federal judge has ordered a hearing to decide whether they should commit this monster to a mental institution. I don't know what the other option is exactly, but watch him walk free. Whether it's 5 years or 10 years, watch this man eventually be released as a free man. It's because of these liberal judges. Now, this man stabbed five people, as we know, with a machete at a Hanukkah party in Muncie back 1 year ago, just over 1 year ago. One of them never woke up and died of his wounds, and a recent psychiatric evaluation found that Grafton Thomas is mentally unfit or remains mentally unfit to stand trial despite months of hospitalization at a federal facility in Missouri where he was diagnosed with schizophrenia. You know how many of these violent murderers or violent criminals have schizophrenia or similar mental issues. I mean, if that somehow declares them unfit to stand trial, I mean, just you can basically release every single violent criminal, or most of them. And that's exactly what the liberals are doing. And that's what bail reform is about. You know, they've released based on COVID. Now, a hearing this month will determine Thomas's prognosis for rehabilitation, whether he should be committed rather than tried in federal court. Federal prosecutors say Grafton Thomas kept handwritten journals containing anti-Semitic comments and a swastika, and he researched Hitler's hatred of Jews online before carrying out this attack. Does this sound like somebody who's mentally disturbed? I mean, he obviously is, again. But mental illness, that's not saying that, like, he's somebody who has is totally out of touch with reality. He clearly had intent. He clearly deliberately did what he did. He targeted a specific group. He knew exactly what he was doing. So Thomas's attorneys, they say, he was not motivated by anti-Semitism. He struggled with mental illness. It's unconscionable. And they asked the judge to dismiss the federal hate crime charges against him. So again, in our current society, mental illness, it like absolves you of responsibility. That is not true. You understand? Yes, they are mentally ill. But mental illness, you are still responsible for your actions, except in certain extreme cases, obviously. But I wanted to keep you updated on that. A federal court has dismissed an appeal by Republican Louie Gohmert. Now, I'm a big supporter of Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas, as I've said many times. But this is a little bit extreme here. Louie Gohmert was suing. Basically, his lawsuit was claiming that the sole decider of the next president should be Mike Pence. That because there's a dispute in Congress and because the electors, there's a dispute amongst the electors. So basically, Louie Gohmert's claim was that Mike Pence should commandeer the Electoral College vote count from Congress, and Mike Pence should be on his own, should be the sole person in the country who decides who the winner is of the election. And look, like I said, I would love for President Trump to remain on as president here for the next 4 years. But it's dangerous to me to have Mike Pence, to have just the vice president and nobody else. And look, Louie Gohmert, he's basing it on the 12th Amendment of the Constitution. He's saying that really, if you look at properly at the Constitution, at the 12th Amendment, then that's what you'll determine. The outcome will be that in situations like this, the VP is the sole determiner of the outcome. But, like, can you imagine the president? Can you imagine if it were a Democrat vice president? Can you imagine having one person in the country of 300 million plus be the person to decide who the next president is? I think that's pretty frightening. Yes, I would like the short-term outcome right now, but think of the long-term repercussions. And Mike Pence himself, by the way, Vice President Mike Pence, he himself fought against this. He actually asked the court to rule against Louie Gohmert and to rule that Mike Pence should not be the one who decides on his own who the next president is. So this was Louie Gohmert lost the initial lawsuit, and then he appealed it, and now he's lost the appeal. It seems he lost on a technicality, by the way. All these lawsuits seem to be decided based on technicalities, which is certainly very interesting, because what does it tell you about the merits? Again, it doesn't automatically mean that on the merits they would win, but it certainly is interesting. But it definitely doesn't tell you, as the media and the left would like you to believe, that they're losing based on the merits, which they're not. But this is the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling hours after Gohmert filed the appeal. So Gohmert essentially is arguing that since competing sets of electors cast votes calling the election for President Trump, that should give Mike Pence the sole discretion to determine the legitimacy of the votes. On Friday, a district court threw out Gohmert's lawsuit, and now the appeals court has affirmed the previous decision. But as I said, it appears from my understanding that they threw it out not because Gohmert is wrong about the 12th Amendment, but they're saying it's a technicality where Louie Gohmert doesn't have standing to file the lawsuit. He's not a party to this lawsuit, so therefore he doesn't have standing, which certainly is very interesting. All right, Palestinians have praised a vicious terrorist murderer, vicious terrorist monster. This is just a horrific person. This terrorist attack happened back in 1987, so quite a while ago. He's still sitting in Israeli prison, and on their official state television channel, the Palestinian government, on its official state television channel, by the way, they've been giving him funding year after year as part of their pay-to-slave program. We'll get to that in a moment. And they praised this man, this monster, this evil, vicious monster who murdered a mother and a small child back in 1987. They praised him as heroic. And this happened, by the way, just days before the killing of a different Israeli mother, a mother of six, last week. The Palestinian Authority praised this terrorist as heroic. He murdered Ofra Moses. She was pregnant and a mother of four when she and her son, Tal, were killed in 1987. And this terrorist, Mohammed Daoud, threw a Molotov cocktail at their car. So in a special report a few weeks ago, December 9th, Palestinian Authority Television reported the heroic terrorist had just begun his 34th year in the occupation's prisons, in the prisons of the occupation. They did not mention the crime he committed, the horrific terrorist attack. They charged Israel with kidnapping Daoud for no apparent reason. That's what they're saying, is that the Israelis, the occupations, kidnapped this terrorist. Here's a quote from the story. On December 8, 1987, with the outbreak of the First Intifada, when young Mohammed Daoud was beginning his path in life, the occupation forces kidnapped him to be a prisoner in their prisons. That's according to a translation by Palestinian Media Watch. This is reported in Breitbart. Lafi Nasura, the director of the Prisoners Club — the Prisoners Club is a government-funded club in the PA — said, quote, "We draw our faith in the certain victory from the resolve of this prisoner and the resolve of all heroic prisoners." When they say heroic prisoners, I don't need to tell you that's code for these terrorist murdering monsters. Daoud is a recipient of the PA's pay for slay scheme, where they pay monthly stipends. We've told you about that many, many times. Pay monthly stipends to convicted terrorists and their families. According to Palestinian Media Watch, this monster has received over $500,000 as compensation, as reward, for this horrific act. Ofra's husband, Tal's father, Abe Moses, called on the payments to stop. He said, quote, "The PA's payments to terrorists must stop. It cannot be the PA is praising the murderer and paying him more than 12,000 shekels a month because he murdered Jews, because he murdered my wife and son. The treatment of the lowly murderer who burned my family and murdered Ofra and Tal as a hero is shocking and unacceptable. I jumped into the burning car to save my family, but I was unable to get Ofra out. She was burned to death right before my eyes and the eyes of our children," end quote. You know how difficult it is for me to read these words and to report on this, but I feel that I have to. We have to be aware of what's going on. Meanwhile, this came just a few days before an Israeli mother of six, Esther Hergen, was violently killed while she was jogging in the West Bank, and they have arrested a Palestinian, a 36-year-old man from Jenin, who, by the way, had served time in Israeli security prisons prior to this horrific, horrific murder. The computer repairman who had turned over the Hunter Biden laptop to Rudy Giuliani, he is suing Twitter, and one lawsuit that he has filed has actually been tossed out, but again on a technicality, and he is going to be able to refile the lawsuit. He's suing Twitter for defamation because Twitter claimed that he was a hacker and that the Hunter Biden laptop, those emails had been hacked, which was a lie. It's totally not true. So a federal judge dismissed the lawsuit brought by the computer repair shop owner in Delaware, who has sued Twitter because they censored the New York Post story and claimed that it was based on hacked information. This is John Paul Mac Isaac, I think is his full name. He filed the lawsuit in Florida, claiming that he was forced to shut down his business, and part of the reason is because Twitter labeled him a hacker. U.S. District Judge Beth Bloom, that same evening, tossed out the case, saying that the court lacks jurisdiction, and as I understand it, federal courts can only be involved. They can't be involved in something that takes place within a state. It's only if it crosses state lines. So even though he's in Delaware and he filed it in Florida, but he's filing against Twitter. Twitter apparently, you know, has some sort of office or has some sort of. Oh, Twitter is incorporated in Delaware. So because Twitter is incorporated in Delaware, and this Mac Isaac lives in Delaware, the federal court does not have jurisdiction. So again, it's just a loophole technicality. But he can file it elsewhere. It was dismissed without prejudice, which means that he can file that same lawsuit somewhere else where they would have jurisdiction, presumably. So the New York Post article says that Giuliani obtained the hard drive from Mac Isaac's repair shop. And Mac Isaac, by the way, says he gave a copy of the laptop to the FBI after Hunter Biden left it behind for repairs. What was Hunter Biden thinking? I mean, clearly not very much, which is not a surprise. When the New York Post attempted to publish the articles on the Twitter account or post a link to the articles on its Twitter account, Twitter said that violated its rule against sharing hacked materials, which is, it's totally, totally baseless. Again, Twitter literally making things up to be able to censor conservative news or anti-Biden news. And here's the lawsuit that was filed. Says, quote, plaintiff is not a hacker. The information obtained from the computer does not constitute hacked material because plaintiff lawfully gained access to the computer, first with permission of its owner, Hunter Biden, and then after Biden failed to retrieve the hard drive, despite plaintiff's requests, in accordance with Mac Shop's abandoned property policy. Mac Isaac Shops. This name is so confusing. What's his name? John Paul Mac Isaac? Whatever. Mac Isaac says, according to the lawsuit, that he is now widely considered a hacker because of Twitter. He's demanding $500 million in punitive damages, as well as unspecified compensatory damages and lawyer's fees. And he's requesting a court order that would force Twitter to make a public retraction of its false statements. Good for him. Hassan Rouhani, by the way, Iran says that they are stepping up their nuclear program and that they plan to advance and develop a nuclear bomb as quickly as humanly possible. Now, they always threaten this. Part of the reason, except when Obama was president, of course, part of the reason they're doing this is because they want to pressure and force Biden, and Biden wants it. See, this is the game, is Biden wants to be pressured by Iran. I know it's just, you know, reprehensible. It's horrifying. But Biden wants Iran to pressure him so that he can have a pretense to then just get back into the deal. No additional sanctions, no renegotiation of the bogus nuclear deal. And get right back into it and tell the American people, well, look, what was I supposed to do? They're literally on the brink. It's thanks to Trump. It's Trump's fault. They're on the brink of developing a nuclear bomb. So going to blame Trump and then say, well, I had no choice, and then get right back into the deal without pressuring Iran. That's the goal here. So it's all this like game that's scripted. And both sides have a vested interest here, both Rouhani and Biden, because they have the same agenda, as we've seen so many times. Anyway, but that's a separate conversation. But Rouhani has threatened President Trump. Yes, this is unbelievable. He said, quote, in a few days, the life of this criminal will end. That was a direct quote of Rouhani discussing, referencing Trump. Rouhani made the threat in a speech to the Iranian cabinet. He was referencing the martyred, evil monster terrorist Qasem Soleimani. This is we're approaching the one-year anniversary of Soleimani's assassination. Rouhani said, in a few days, the life of this criminal will end and he will go to the dustbin of history. One of the effects of this stupid and disgraceful act was that Trumpism ended. We are very happy about this. We believe the period after Trump will be a better condition for regional and global stability. Oh, yeah, that's what he cares about, Rouhani. As I said, after the martyrdom of Martyr Soleimani, I emphasize again, if you cut off Martyr Soleimani's hand, we will cut off your leg from the region. We will continue the resistance until that day. Our nation will not give up until they take revenge on his blood as its right. And I believe, by the way, today is the anniversary, January 3rd, the one-year anniversary of the assassination of Qasem Soleimani. The Washington Post has warned that Joe Biden could create havoc and chaos at the southern border. This is the Washington, the leftist, anti-Trump, pro-Biden Washington Post, pro-open border Washington Post. Basically, even they admit that if Biden does what he's promising to do at the southern Mexican border, that it could be an absolute disaster. If he follows through, his campaign promise has been to immediately reverse Trump's policies at the border, the Remain in Mexico policy, the policies that are sending back asylum seekers. And Trump has implemented these amazing policies, which have really just completely solved. Remember, the border was a disaster. It was a disaster. People were coming across in droves, catch and release, and Congress was not doing a thing to help. The detention facilities, those facilities, people were just living in squalor. I mean, the conditions of those facilities were horrible. And Trump solved it. He sent people to Honduras and to Mexico, and he got these countries, Mexico, Honduras, Guatemala, to agree to take in asylum seekers. Unbelievable. And now Biden's going to reverse it all. And the Washington Post is saying that people are going to be flooding the border, asking for asylum. And of course, they're going to get it, but it's going to be an absolute nightmare. They want him to implement it slowly, more incrementally, whatever. But even they admit it. And this is what he's promising to do. All right. And finally, you know, Dr. Fauci has lied to the American public multiple times. This is not something that I bring up a lot. I'm just not comfortable with the whole topic matter, subject matter. Maybe I should get more comfortable. Maybe not. I don't know. But I'm just telling you the reality. But I have to mention it because Dr. Fauci, I'm just going to tell you facts. I'm not even going to tell you my own opinion. Maybe you'll kind of be able to figure it out. That's fine. But you know, I think if I just lay out the facts here, just for people to be aware of, Dr. Fauci, how do we know that Dr. Fauci has lied to the American public multiple times? Because he's told us. He admits it. So I'm literally just telling you his own words, Dr. Fauci's own words, and I'm going to tell you Senator Marco Rubio, by the way, who's not at all radical. Senator Marco Rubio, you know, he actually put out an op-ed on Fox, on Fox's news website with a scathing attack on Dr. Fauci. And, you know, you be the judge. We'll lay out the facts, so you be the judge, but I'll tell you both perspectives over here. And here's the question you have to ask yourself. Should Dr. Fauci be the one who's deciding whether to lie to the American people? His motive, let's assume his motives are good. His motives are in the right place. He's trying to protect as many lives as possible. He's trying to save lives. He's trying to protect public health. That's what his motivation is. So let's give him that's his motivation, which it appears to be. But then now he's manipulating, he's lying, and he's doing it, you know, let's say with a noble intent, with noble motivation in mind. Is that the appropriate thing? Just ask yourself the question. I'm not even going to tell you whether it is or it is not. Ask yourself the question. Decide for yourself. And furthermore, should Dr. Fauci even be speaking to the public? Because he's a doctor. He's the infectious disease expert guy. He's the one who's supposed to be advising politicians. He's not setting public policy. So should he even be the one speaking to the American people? Maybe he should just be advising behind the scenes. You know, and you know, then we can get deeper and, you know, discuss Fauci's real motive, whatever. I don't want to go there. But here's some quotes here from Rubio's op-ed. Rubio blasted Fauci, saying that the nation's top immunologist selectively lied to the American public about the coronavirus and what was needed in our national recovery. In the Fox News op-ed, Rubio pointed out that Fauci and other top scientists said for months that about 60 to 70% of the U.S. population would need to develop antibodies either through the vaccine or through getting COVID in order for the country to reach herd immunity. But in a recent New York Times interview, Dr. Fauci admitted he believes the real number is actually significantly higher, 75 to 90%. And the reason that he didn't want to be forthcoming originally is because he felt the country was not ready to hear it. But then he said that when he saw that people were getting excited about the vaccine, he felt he could nudge it up a bit without discouraging the nation. That is a direct quote from Fauci speaking to the New York Times, that he nudged the number up from 60 to 70 to 75 to 90% because he felt that more people were willing to take the vaccine. Well, which one is the correct number? He doesn't care about the facts. I shouldn't say he doesn't care about the facts. I take that back. Fauci decided to not give us the actual facts because he felt he wanted to control people's behavior. And maybe that's the right thing. Maybe that's not. You decide. Here's a quote from Rubio. I am sure Dr. Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, made the decision to mislead with nothing but good intentions. However, let's be clear about what he was doing, lying to the American people in order to manipulate their behavior. The American people deserve the truth. They also deserve accountability. When elected representatives make decisions, they can be held responsible by the public. But when public health officials with decades of experience and leadership within our nation's institutions short-circuit the political process, make these decisions themselves, they deny the American people that same opportunity and to change course if desired. On Sunday, in a CNN interview, host Dana Bash pressed Fauci on moving the numbers, asked him why he was not straight with the American people about this to begin with, and he said, quote, "No, actually, Dana, I don't think it can be interpreted as being straight or not. We have to realize that we have to be humble and realize we don't know. These are pure estimates. The calculations that I made, 70 to 75%, it's a range. The range is going to be somewhere between 70, 85%. The reason I first started saying 70, 75, I brought it up to 85. That's not a big leap to go from 75 to 85. It was really based on calculations and pure extrapolations from measles. Measles is about 98% effective vaccine. The COVID vaccine is 94, 95% when you get below 90%, yada, yada, yada. But humble, he's being humble. You know, he wasn't being humble. Humble is you say, I don't know. Humble is not you keep changing because anyway, you know, there's no way to know for sure. So I'm going to keep quoting things. And yes, I am, I guess, breaching the line that I drew for myself earlier here. Rubio concluded his piece by blasting Fauci's arrogance. I do not question Dr. Fauci's motives. I trust they are noble, but I am appalled by his arrogance. If he wants to lead the nation, he should run for office. Otherwise, he should give us an honest and transparent reading of the science, not polling data. Let the rest of us, policymakers and the American people who have elected them, do our jobs. End quote. So again, here's the question. Is it Fauci's job, even if let's assume that his motivation is lofty, and even let's assume that somebody says, listen, it's okay to mislead the public, but he's the scientist. He's not the politician. You know, so is that his call? Or is that the call of Vice President Pence, the leader of the task force, or President Trump? Or if Biden becomes president, then Joe Biden. Is that their call? Or, you know, again, whether you agree or disagree with the tactic, but put that aside. But is it Fauci's position? Rubio is saying, no, he's the scientist. He's supposed to give us the facts. If you cannot trust the scientist to give us the facts, then where are you? That's Rubio's. That's his take. And Fauci's take is, no, listen, I need to make sure to protect public health. I'd have to do whatever it takes. My job is not to report the facts. My job is to make sure that people behave the way I want them to behave. And the other question you have to ask yourself, a much more basic question, should Fauci have ever even discussed things with the public? You know how many people give Trump and these politicians advice all the time behind the scenes, but it is just not their job to get up there in front of the microphone because that's just not their role? All right, that's going to do it on a very busy, very lively Sunday, and we will see you next time.